Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang Podcast, episode 137. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim, Mr. Smooth Elliott.
We're grooving down here in Lakeville.
Graham, I've got my new clothes on, thickens.
Clothes on? Yeah, I don't have any clothes on. I'm at the beach, man. I'm in San Clemente, and it's damn early out here.
Phil,
not even light yet.
And Phil, I've got the blues because I can't root my device. Listen.
No, nobody's supposed to know your root devices.
Oh, it's root. It's not root. It's root. See,
it's root, yes.
Oh, come on.
You guys, roots, yeah.
What's with the semantics? No, it's, I don't know. It's root.
Is it creek or crick?
Yeah, well, there's that too.
Hey, in England, they call a router a router. I swear to God. A router.
Well, they do.
Internet router.
They're just not right there.
That's hilarious.
No, something's wrong.
That's why we left.
Well, when I was in Germany, I asked a guy, sprechen Sie English? And he says, yes, and in fact, I speak the king's English. So he was being very, you know, making sure that I understood that we Yanks over here, we colonists don't quite do justice to the English language.
We don't measure up over here.
That's right.
The pond.
That's right. So, Graham, where are you? You've been at a show.
Oh, yeah. I'm in Southern California, and I was at, but I was in Northern California for three and a half days at Demo in Santa Clara, and it was a blowout conference.
Really?
Might have been the biggest one ever. I didn't really ask them about that, but, you know, having it in the valley draws a lot more people because they can just drive there. But they were claiming like 1,000-ish and 80 companies pitching. I mean, it was like an unbelievable content fire hose. And I was working my butt off to try to capture it. So it was, I feel like I've, you know, finally can break from, 12, 14 hours of work a day. And I still don't have all my videos uploaded.
Wow.
You know, I finally did the flip thing, as you guys know. And so I'm shooting videos like, you know, I'm like a kid in a candy store, you know, and I think I still have 10 more to upload. So it was fun.
See, you're the one that's wasting all the internet bandwidth, damn it.
Yeah, I've been sucking it up.
I've been paying for it for years.
You know, and I'm trying to do these short interviews of like 2-3 minutes. And of course, people want to keep talking. So they're more like 5-6-8 minute interviews.
Right.
You know. So anyway, it's fun. And it was amazing. There were so many great companies and saw a lot of good friends and met a bunch of new ones. And I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about many of these companies. So I started putting together my top 10 list. And I'm already up to 15.
Oh, jeez.
So it's now the top 15 list.
Yeah. I'm going to change that.
Well, so here, I'm going to direct people. I'll put links in the show notes here. Did a post about Me and My Money, a Minneapolis startup
that
was out there. And you did a video interview. And so I'll make sure that I put that in the show notes.
Cool.
But here's the overriding question, because I'm certain that there was discussion about this out there. But TechCrunch Disrupt was going on. Mm-hmm. There was overlap going on.
They did that on purpose,
yeah,
just to get into Demo's space, you know.
Sure, sure.
And face.
Right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But here's what's interesting is I've had two people that I've talked to about those two events, Demo and TechCrunch Disrupt, who have said, you know, the quality of the companies at Demo are better.
Yep.
Is that kind of your gut feel? I mean, I know you weren't at both events.
No, I couldn't. I wasn't going to shuttle back and forth from Santa Clara up to the city, you know. A couple people did. I mean, there were some people who did one day there and one day at Demo, but the quality of the event is what's markedly different, because I have been to a TechCrunch event before. I did see one VC tweet to somebody at Demo that the quality of the programming at TechCrunch Disrupt wasn't all that great. And you know, I mean, I don't even know who was hosting it. I guess was Eric Schoenfeld hosting it? I joked that I thought maybe Arianna Huffington was going to host it. But I don't think she showed up. But anyway, I didn't hear a lot of buzz about it at at demo, but what kind of disappointed me is some of my good friends and contacts apparently decided, one guy from Google especially that I always see at demo wasn't there, Don Dodge, but there were several other Google people there. And there was the funny thing, did you see the CNET story about Reid Hoffman opened both events? I don't know how he did that.
Funny.
He was the opening interview at demo, and apparently he shuttled, I don't know if he did TechCrunch Disrupt first or second. I think he did it second. But he was awesome. But yeah, they did a funny story about how, you know, he was double booked. And then there was at least one company that had representatives at both shows. And I wondered about that. Houdini, which is one of my top 15, apparently had part of their team at TechCrunch Disrupt and part at demo. And there may have been some other companies too, but I think it's hard to beat demo because they've been doing it so long and so well, and the production values and the quality of the people and the staff behind it and everything is just top notch.
So what was in your view, number one most hottest?
Well, it's hard to say number one, but the juiciest, most visual thing that you look at and you go, oh my God, was Aurasma, Aurasma. And they embed objects into, it's like a virtual reality thing that embeds objects, like video objects, into what you're looking at. I mean, it demos like you wouldn't believe. And sure enough, they were the first one named a Demo God Award winner. Go look at Aurasma.com. It was amazing. But it's so hard to pick one. Like I say, yeah, it's hard to pick 15 out of 80. I mean, and the thing that struck me this year is that many of these companies are bootstrapped or just, founder funded. There are a few that had just nailed a funding round, like Houdini just got a couple million from Silicon Valley. I don't know who, Angels in the Valley. And another one, Life Crowd, had just raised 2 million. But the great vast majority hadn't yet gotten any outside funding, which is amazing to me. It's just to go through the process and get up on stage at demo is a lot of you have to go through a lot of work and have your act together really, really well. And kudos to the Me and My Money people from Minneapolis, because they didn't fully make the commitment until I think early August that, you know what, we're going to go for this. And they did an amazing job, those guys. So
that's great.
Minneapolis was well represented for a second demo in a row.
Well, speaking of the Twin Cities, I get pinged frequently at Minovate about companies that, do development and so forth, and they're value-added resellers or systems integrators or something, but there's a lot of folks that are sort of in the Windows space. They're ASP developers or whatever, and they're trying to make transitions into what's next and trying to figure out what's next. And mm-hmm. Phil, I think you were the only one out of our group who watched the entire Windows 8 build roll out. And
well, that's because you guys can't watch a keynote unless somebody's wearing a black turtleneck. So,
well, one could argue that's true.
Well, I had interest in Windows 8. That's where I started with, my world of computing was Windows, was as many people did. And plus, I do some work with our friends here at Magenic in St. Louis Park. So, and they are a .NET and Microsoft shop. So I had a good time just sort of sitting in. And I can tell you that the keynote, if you haven't seen it, it is available online, but the keynote was incredibly long, for one thing. Steven Sinofsky really tried to pack pretty much an entire convention's worth of stuff into a keynote. It was incredibly long. But
Whereas I think that Steve Jobs and Apple have mastered in their, you know, their opening keynotes and their rollouts, they've mastered shock and awe. I think that Windows has a lot on the line, so they needed to spend a lot more time talking about, you know, what they're doing with this new interface, what they're doing with the OS, and, you know, where it works and where it doesn't. So, but it was interesting. And enjoyed catching up with it. I look forward to it. It's really a pre-beta, pre-release stage. There's like two or three more releases planned before they actually take it, you know, full-scale release. But they are encouraging, because of the new style, the new what they call Metro-style interface, they're going to need a whole bunch of apps developed. So they were very much courting the developer space. They made the OS available that day. They gave every developer in the house what they call a PC. We know it as a tablet, but they call it a PC.
Yep.
They all got Samsung tablet / PCs. And so it's going to be interesting to see. I love the way Windows or Microsoft sort of, you know, develops new vocabulary. You know, one is that they don't call it a tablet, they call it a PC. The other is everything we know as icons, guys. Microsoft charms. Knows them as charms.
Yes.
So not only are they part of your magically delicious breakfast, they are they are now on your computer.
So you're saying they're lucky.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. And I believe if you could actually take those off of the screen, they would taste like freeze-dried marshmallows.
Fabulous. Well, so, let's talk more about Windows 8 though after we have our guest on, so we actually can talk about it a little bit more at length. How about that?
Sounds good to me.
Techni Awards, the Minnesota High Tech Association, and Phil, you did a post about it on Minovate, and what a great group of companies.
It is a good group of companies, and you know what? The big comment that was made, especially regarding, you know, it was really kind of revolved around Digital River. They've been nominated again, or finalist again, and you know, they used to be the new and emerging company. Now they're in the mainstream categories.
They're like
they all grew up inside Techni, so the Techni Awards. But it was a nice little affair, a lot of hors d'oeuvres and a lot of, you know, when we go to MHTA events, we always look around the room and say, wow, there's a lot of suits and ties in this place.
Right.
And there were, but I also realized I was wearing a tie.
Oh, my God.
Oh, you were?
I know. I was like, wow, it's just, look at all these ties. Oh, wait a minute. I'm wearing one.
so old school.
Huh? I know. I was kicking it old school, baby. And had a chance to meet some fine folks. Met the new local Google representative there, and we can talk more about that.
Are they hiring in Minnesota?
There's
buzz going around. Hiring what?
Business representatives to help businesses benefit from Google and the Google apps and features that they offer. So
did they open an office in the Twin Cities?
I don't know if they've got an office, but they're putting on a bunch of different, they put on workshops around the city. And, you know, I first noticed it not only when they joined MHTA, but also they were running some radio ads inviting small businesses or businesses to come to an event they had at the River Center. And I found that when I was talking to this guy from Google, and I'm sorry, his name is escaping me right now, and I will find it. So I'm not, you know, just blithering on here, but he said they had a great turnout. They had some thousand companies that Ben Thies
How many they had 1,000 companies show up?
A thousand businesses showed up throughout the course of the day to learn about Google and what it does.
Huh. So are they targeting small business or
targeting business in general? They're just targeting the push is to become more local focused, to have more of a local presence. When I was talking to Ben here, who is the field marketing lead, that is his official name or his official title. They were in like at the beginning of the year, they were in 13 markets, obviously the largest markets, and now they're in 30 markets. So they have representatives starting to sort of emerge locally.
Well, and here's the interesting thing too, is the when they joined MHTA, Google was very clear about the announcement that this didn't mean anything really, that they weren't going to build a big presence here and so forth, but that they wanted to support the High Tech Association. But what was interesting was them coming out and saying that 25% of small business in the state of Minnesota has zero internet presence.
Yeah.
And that was a little frightening because I thought, you know, oh my God, what are they still buying Yellow Page ads or what?
Yep.
And if they're not in the game, that's bad. Well, Google is apparently going to be rolling out a lot of new apps, a lot of new internet-based apps over the next few weeks. And Google Sites, which, you know, my grandma could design sites better than Google Sites allows you to. I would assume that they're gonna make that more robust and make that more of an integrated part of Google Apps, because Google Apps I am absolutely incredibly high on, and I think they're gonna take it to the next level. I think they're gonna have some fairly major rollouts, and I think that'll really help Minnesota.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I got a DM while I was at demo from Paul DeBettings saying, I'm hearing Google's hiring here. Is that true? And I go, I don't know. I'm in California, dude. Yeah. But wow. We'll see.
Pretty much
they
all
do.
Hired out in California. So
well,
when I was talking to Ben about that, he said he answered it was a blind box ad. So just for a marketing sales position. In the Twin Cities, and he just answered it. So, and it turned out to be Google. He said, I got a call from, this is so-and-so from Google. It's like, huh?
How funny.
Because, you know, Google is infamously impenetrable. So whenever, I mean, if you have ever tried to do anything with Google, you know, there's no phone number.
There's
you can't
no support.
There's nobody. There's nobody to talk to.
No phone, no people. Yeah, no people support, right. Well, it sounds to me like they might be trying to do a Groupon, you know. Hire 1,000 people to, you know, get on the horn and start going after local businesses. And somehow those guys scaled that. But I heard a guy say on stage at demo that couldn't be done in the Valley. He said that Groupon was unique in that, you know, in the Valley, if somebody would have presented a business plan like that, they'd have said, you're crazy. You can't scale that many people.
Yeah.
You know, we do technology here, not people.
Not humans. You know? Yeah. Go to healthcare and hire a bunch of people.
Yeah. But somehow Groupon, you know, pulled it off and hired thousands of people to sell.
Yep.
You know.
Well, all the crazy ideas that, you know, were not funded, you know, some of them turn out to be big companies like FedEx is another one.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, he got a C- on the business case for FedEx.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In business school. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Yep. It's just so, yeah. The key as an entrepreneur is, you know, you have to really believe in, you can't have, you know, people telling you it isn't going to work. And, you know, if you really believe it's going to work, you just ignore them and you make it work, you know?
Well, isn't kind of Groupon a weird timing thing though, where they had this local idea and then they sort of grow and launch during a very deep recession. So they're able to get, you know, feet on the street very quickly that are probably a lot better than they would have gotten in another time when, you know, there was more competition for labor.
Yes, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we have a guest on today's show, so let's kind of move into that. And, you know, we haven't talked to our friends at Mojo for a while. And so I think we have an opportunity to chat with Ernest Grumbles and some other folks from Mojo, find out what's going on in their world as far as, you know, Mojo Minnesota is an advocacy force here with business leaders, a lot of lawyers in the group. They call themselves instigators and
strong entrepreneurs as well.
Strong entrepreneurs. Yep. So let's get Ernest on and find out what's going on at Mojo Minnesota.
Yeah, that sounds great. And for those that don't know Ernest, he's the guy's delightful. High energy.
World Texan, right?
I don't know.
He's from Texas originally, I think. I've never met him, but
Hey, Ernest, Steve Borsch, Graham Thickens, Tim Elliott, Phil Wilson.
Guys, hey. How you doing?
We're great. How about you?
Good. It's a funky, cloudy Friday morning here.
Yeah, it's kind of a funky, cloudy Friday morning. What happened to that? Are we supposed to get rain?
No, it's beautiful all week.
Yep.
Beautiful, and then we get this cool. Let me. I'm going to put you guys on speaker. So I've got my fellow Mojo colleague Mary Meehan here.
Oh, good deal.
Iconoculture founder.
Yes, the Iconoculture woman herself. Go on. Let me turn you guys up.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good morning.
Can you all hear us all right?
I think so.
We can.
And what we can't hear, we'll fix in post.
Yeah.
Because Steve actually does a very good Mary Meehan impersonation, so it all works.
That's scary.
That is scary. Yeah. So bring us up to date. What's the latest at Mojo Minnesota, you guys?
Okay, so Mojo Minnesota, we got fall is a good time for us. We like to, you get past the cabin season of summer. It's hard to move. Get much motion on stuff. We've got a number of fun things coming up. We've got one of our Mojo Mixer events coming up either late October, early November, which is a person-to-person in event connecting entrepreneurs, directly with some of the agitators on different topics of finance and startup issues. We usually do it in some kind of industrial space where people can kind of hang out in quiet spots and work their way around and talk to different people. And so it's kind of a speed mentoring event. That's what we call it. So we got that coming up. Working on a technology prize for a particular kind of technology that's still a little bit under wraps right now, but it's something that's meant to allow Minnesota to kind of take a leadership spot on some technology that's coming into the fore. It's not clean, green technology. It's something else. But that we should be going public with some aspects of that pretty shortly. Continuing to work on different kind of policy and kind of community building initiatives. We've got, I've done some outreach with the Secretary of State's office. We're working on going to be working with them on some friendly hacks related to how their information goes out to the world and things like that, some fun stuff. And then we've got a couple of us are involved in ongoing efforts to build a regional entrepreneurship accelerator here, along with a number of other folks beyond Mojo. And so that's fun. That's kind of a quick snapshot of some things that are going on right now.
Oh, you got lots going on. So tell me, kind of look around survey the local startup scene and tell us who you're most excited about, who you feel has really started to reach out towards the tipping point and kind of give us a vibe on that.
Okay. Well, let's say I've got my Mojo hat on and I've got my kind of attorney hat on too, because I work with a lot of startup entrepreneurs. But so I see, interesting to see, but I would say that overall, the last 2 years and especially this year, I have a real revitalization, especially in the space that you guys are interested in, information technology startups. It seems to be that the number of startups has increased, the positive vibe of the developer community. Most of the developers I know, software developers, are, A, they can't hire people fast enough, and they've got so much work, it's hard to get them, it's hard to get time with them. And to me, that's a good sign. I mean, it means an innovative enterprise is either buying their time or else they're spending time developing their own products and they're not sleeping much, which is great for our economy. Seems to be that things like the Clean Tech Open and the Clean Green Space is continuing to rock. Let me turn back to the information technology stuff for a second, though. Which is, it seems like our local enterprises are starting to get that level of savviness back to where they're getting eyed by investors locally as well as stuff from the coast. So, also for acquisition, you've seen some interesting acquisitions lately. And you look at something like Zencode. I'm sure you guys have a particular opinion on that. But you can say, look, if Minnesota company is actually able to grow and be big enough, kind of like complaining like one of your players gets, this will sound like a bad example, gets recruited to the Yankees. Is that a failure on your part that they didn't stay here, or success that you just sent somebody up to a much larger market? I think it's, arguably a success, but I think there's a lot of great things going on right now.
So Mary, I have a question for you, because you are obviously with, you and your colleague launched Iconoculture, which was, really a trend business. And you've launched a new one now called Panoramics Global. And what kinds of things are you seeing in terms of Minnesota, but within the context of of where things are headed directionally. I mean, we've talked a lot about how, you know, not only business but education, entertainment, everything is sort of being mapped onto the internet and accelerating as a consequence. And how are you seeing Minnesota fit into that?
Well, Minnesota is really unique in that the education level here in the state is really high. So there are lots of people here that are interested in moving the economy forward, either just for themselves or for a new business or for a large company. So there's a lot of people here that are interested in new companies as well. And in the areas, you know, particularly if you look at migration trends as well, migration is a big mover in terms of intellectual property and just intellectual capital that moves in and out of a state. And we're attracting a lot of that here.
With respect to Mojo Minnesota, are you... Tell us about your involvement with respect to, you know, being one of the agitators. And one of the things that's been frustrating as we've looked at more and more organizations who are either not really innovating in terms of embracing technology, embracing the social connection stuff, and really capitalizing on what the trends are. There's sort of that part of it. In terms of Mojo, do you see any kind of an education of business being available or being something that should be fostered so that we can raise everyone's level of awareness?
Well, I think, you know, my interest in Mojo Minnesota is in bringing together the community of entrepreneurship and innovation. So really encouraging the participation of all the different individuals and areas of talent that contribute to innovation within the Twin Cities and then within the state. And of course, it goes beyond that as well. So entrepreneurs, you know, just speaking from my own position within the community, entrepreneurs tend to be sort of lone wolves or somebody with an idea that they're trying to create. And resources in order to make all of that happen are usually what's really in short supply, either the advice that you need or the information that you need or the capital that you need in order to make that work, or just the encouragement that you need to actually, you know, move forward with an idea that you have. So I really think that that's important because, you know, there's a lot's been said in the news recently about what innovation means to our economy. And, you know, here's one way that we can help that within the Twin Cities here.
How about outstate? This is Graham. Hi, Mary and Ernest. Are you guys doing anything to try to you know, connect with the folks in, you know, St. Cloud, Duluth, Rochester, and other wherever startup founders may reside in our state?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, we have done some. It's, you know, it's largely a function of the fact that the bulk of the population, for better or worse, is clustered around the whatever 7 or 13 county metro area you talk about. But right. At the same time, no, I'm particularly sensitive to that issue because I think that the state has a number of underutilized assets. You know, like one of the things I like to think about is you think about the position of the Twin Cities vis-a-vis two of the cities you just mentioned, St. Cloud and Rochester. You know, both those places. You can think about like the role that San Francisco plays vis-a-vis Berkeley and like San Jose or Palo Alto. You know, we should be grooming, like right now, I think Rochester is an underdeveloped asset. It hasn't stepped up to the level of significance that it should have, given that having something like Mayo there and the ridiculous amount of innovation that Mayo does. St. Cloud State with a very large university there, it's just close enough to where it can really leverage the Twin City stuff, but it's far enough away that it should be developing its own persona. And I know there's been some good, I know like the MIDI demo guys went up there and had a really successful event.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
Not to St. Cloud yet, but for Rochester, I've done kind of a lot of quiet stuff, trying to build relationships with Mayo and try to find ways to build better connections between what Mayo's doing in the Twin Cities. I've had some candid conversations with a few folks down there, and there's a lot of work to be done. In terms of Duluth, they've got some interest. I'm sure you guys know, I don't mention names, I guess I can mention them. Ben Dahman, you guys probably know him. I've got a number of conversations with him about some of the stuff he's trying to do in Duluth and ways that Mojo could get plugged in and to try to help support that, because I think that's, to me, like, Duluth should be like it's the place where if you want to live in Minnesota, but you want to have this amazing, like, go out of your backyard and go backpacking, that's one of the few places that you can do. So we need to kind of nurture that image, too. It's a place where you could kind of, you could go code during the day and then go backpack. You
know? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They also have a very savvy city council and, you know, political leadership there that are really driving. I mean, you know, not only the Google, trying to get the Google fiber there, but
yeah,
just all the initiatives that they do, they're really trying to be catalysts.
Yep. It's an amazing place. Yeah. It's a jewel in Minnesota, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
So, well, you know, let's kind of just briefly wrap up. What are you seeing on the legislative side? You know, one of the pushes that you guys have always been involved in is the legislature and how the Minnesota government participates in furthering innovation. Tell us anything new in that arena.
Well, yeah. So that's been an interesting process. I'd say last year compared to this year, compared to what we're looking forward to and the fun we're looking forward to in 2012. You know, last year was a great chance to have bipartisan collaboration on a number of things. You know, much improved creation of the Angel Investor Tax Credit, much improved R&D tax credit, things like this. You know, the birth of the Science and Technology Authority, and then this year has been, and a lot of those things have borne fruit, especially the Angel Investor Tax Credit. That has worked. This year, the output was a lot smaller, and frankly, the distractions were tremendously greater with the whole shutdown and a lot of, given the economy and the state it's in, a woeful lack of focus on stuff that needs to get done. So harder to point to great stuff that came out of this year. I think some small expansion to the R&D tax credit, a few tweaks, the angel investor tax credit. But there's a lot of work to be done. When you talk about policy at the state level, a lot of it's administrative policy, and I know that Dayton has tried to make some efforts by bringing Kathy Thunheim in to help kind of re-engineer a little bit of the stuff that's going on in Minnesota Deed. That's very encouraging. We're very supportive of that. You know, you get stuff at the federal level, too. There was a big Startup America, White House Office of Small Business, blah, 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 was doing has done Startup America visits around the United States and collected lots of ideas, and they're actually starting to implement some of those. So I mean, they're looking at some pretty cool things, both in terms of making it easier, for example, to get medical devices through, to make it easier for small companies to get financing. So I think you are, I'm crossing my fingers, probably foolishly, that some of these things will have a chance and won't get completely mired in election year politics.
You know, it's
good luck with that.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, Ernest, it's interesting you'd mentioned Startup America. They had a huge presence at the demo conference I just attended in Santa Clara earlier this week, and Scott Case was there, and they were a major sponsor of that event and a large startup weekend that was held prior to it, the largest ever. So, yeah, Startup America has got a lot of mojo going for sure.
Well, I have... Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, the good thing about it is that there are things... I'm a firm believer, and I very much like things that can just be done that don't require the permission of 1,000 people. That's kind of a... You know, mojo especially likes those kind of things. So they're wisely focusing on lots of things that are under their control that don't require the creation of new departments and massive new appropriations. They're things that you can bend the pipes and make them go a different way with the existing pipes. And so I think that's smart thinking given the financial challenges we're having.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely no question. I just have one last question. I know we're running out of time, but and this is probably a show in and of itself, but are there any headlines about what's going on with patents, Ernest? Because I get into these conversations all the time with startups and entrepreneurs about the acceleration in the use of patents in the mobile space and with tablets and so on, and everybody's going back and forth. And then what Nathan Myhrvold, the former CTO of Microsoft, who started Intellectual Ventures, is doing with patents. Besides it giving you probably 10x the amount of business than you could possibly handle, what's the big headline with patents? Is there a big movement afoot for reform? Is there a lot of pushback on intellectual process patents, things of that nature? Kind of what's going on right now?
Well, there actually is a fair amount of stuff going on right now. You've got a big patent reform bill that's probably going to come out of Congress and get signed by Obama that is going to bring some important changes. You can call them reforms depending on your standpoint. That's going to be the first kind of big changes to the patent statute since like the 1950s or whatever. One of which is, for example, that just quickly, the rest of the world follows first to file system, which is if two people invent something and one invents one like 2 months ahead of the other, the one that invents more recently goes to the patent office first, you know, assuming neither of them know about each other and they're not mm-hmm. copying each other. It goes to the patent office first. They're the one who's going to get the patent. It doesn't matter that the earlier person conceived it first. And so traditional rule of then is the person who conceived it first could then also file and then duel with that person in front of the patent office and get a hold of the patent themselves. In reality, those kind of disputes almost never happen. So I think it's going to sound like a big shockwave, and it's not actually going to impact on, you know, it's always smart to file patents early in companies. If you're going to file them, not sit on them. So I think that's going to pretty much hold true. There's also some things like the ability to attack a patent like within a certain period of time after it's issued, similar to the way they do with trademarks, where you can kind of oppose the creation of the patent.
Okay.
Time period, make it easier and cheaper to do that. You know, to the problem you're talking about of patent troll activity, a lot of the stuff that would have, the courts have continued to whittle that back. But yeah, you're going to see a rising furor, I think, about that kind of stuff. And of course, now the mobile companies have all hopped on it and suing each other all the time. So it's
right.
Headlines will continue.
Patents as a defense.
They're tools, and this is like a knife, right? A knife can be used to do good things, and it can be used to do bad things.
Yep.
Well, listen, before we wrap up, what would you like to, you know, just kind of offer out there as far as what people can do to get involved with what Mojo is doing? Give us a sort of a call to action here.
Well, like I can let Mary, why don't you chime in on something on that, and I can add my little two cents of Mary.
Oh, sure. Okay. So I think it was, you know, it really is around inspiration and ideas and moving forward on new businesses and new ideas. And so it's really getting involved in the activities that Mojo is creating, like the mixer. Ernest mentioned the talk that we're going to do. There's lots of great topics that we're bringing people together around. So I think it's really the involvement and looking to Mojo as a source of advice or as a connector to the folks who can give the kind of advice that you might need if you want to start something new. So I think that's a way to get involved.
Yeah, the other thing too is we tell people is consistent with what we try to do is just if you see problems that are reasonable to try to solve, don't worry about asking for anybody's permission or worry about turf or any of this kind of stuff. Just dive in and start working on it. That's the most essential thing. Like if you're in a rowboat and there's water pooling at the bottom of the boat, you know, don't necessarily form a huge committee to figure out how to take the water out. Just grab a pail and start shoveling. And that's what people need to do. You know, we're dealing with that with other groups. We don't worry about as much about hierarchies and boundaries and walls and all this kind of stuff. Just dive in and start doing stuff.
Always good advice.
Sounds great. Well, listen, you guys, thanks very much for popping on with us for a little bit to sort of give us an update on Mojo. When is the next mixer? And is that open to pretty much anybody, or is that just members of Mojo?
What's that? Say it again.
The mixer?
That'll be primarily open to startup entrepreneurs. I mean, like the largest number of people that are actually direct founder CEOs of nascent startup companies. But we'll have some information about that. And we always have, there's always room for special guests like you guys.
Thank you.
Will there be food?
Will there be food, Phil asks.
Because, you know, I just put on my, you know, my sport coat with the plastic lined pockets, and I just, you know, go for the food. All right, you guys, thanks very much. Have a great weekend, and good luck, and keep up the great work with Mojo.
Thank you. You guys have a great weekend as well.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Always good to catch up with Ernest Grumbles, and well, it's getting nice to have a voice of the fairer sex on the podcast.
Well, and not only that, but I'll put a link to their site to Mary Meehan and her colleagues, Vicki Abramson's site called Panoramics Global. This is somebody I would like to just sit down with and talk to for a couple hours, because my wife does trends for the home furnishings industry. But Panoramics and formerly when they started Econoculture, same sort of directional thing is to look at all the macro trends and not just U.S. centric, but global, and not just technology, but societal and economic and political and all of this, and put it together and say, you know, here are some options for paths through all these different areas. They guide companies, and they've got a lot of them that they've worked with, a lot of major brands. So we'll have to find a time to get her on and talk to her about some of those big trends. We need to just keep talking for a moment about Windows 8. It was Phil, when you called me and asked me if I'd looked at the keynote, if I'd watched any of it, and I said no.
Yeah.
I did, after that, realize, yeah, I probably should have carved out the time. I didn't have the time to carve out, but I should have carved out something. But thank God I didn't, if it was 2.5 hours long. But I've gone through and I've looked at a lot of the recaps. I've looked at a couple of synopsis videos and so on. And one post in particular sort of stuck out on TechMeme. A guy talked about the post PC era.
The post PC.
And how, you know, the iPad is the post PC, but Windows 8 is the post PC, because it integrates, you know, it has both. It has both tablet functionality and the actual PC operating system underneath it. Now, on the one hand, we can all see how OS X Lion is the first real step toward the merging of Apple's iOS and their Mac OS, and that eventually it'll be one central product. What's interesting to me about the two approaches is the one thing that I fear about a Windows 8 approach, and I can't really settle that fear until I get my hands on it and actually live with it for a while, but the beauty of having a tablet OS, whether it's web OS or Android or iOS, is the fact that for the most part, you have one application in front of your face at any given point in time. And you don't really have access to have 7 or 10 or 20 apps open at once and 15 windows and, you know, 35 tabs in your browser and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I know myself well enough that as soon as I wanted to do something, I would quit out of the tablet interface and I'd be right into the PC interface. And consequently, you know, am I going to be able to migrate past that, or are any of us? And so it's going to be real interesting to see how the two approaches, the Apple approach and the Microsoft approach, as the personal computer and the tablet sort of merge, who's going to have the winning OS? Because I worry that, you know, Microsoft typically puts every single possible thing that anyone could ever want into the product, which is why, even in my geeky nature, there are times when I sit down with Microsoft Word and I'm like, what the, how do I do that again? And I spend 10 or 15 minutes trying to figure out how the hell to flip some switch or twiddle some bit, you know, I swear to God.
And then you bang your head against the wall. It's like, what's this ribbon thing? What is this? I don't understand.
Or how about this little talking thing that pops up? It's like, get the hell out of here.
Oh my God.
That hasn't been on there for a long time, Graham.
Oh my God. Yeah. And I hate it.
The talking paper clip. Is that what you're doing?
Oh my God.
Clippy. Yeah.
Clippy. Kill that Clippy. Thing.
Well, and you know what I find really fascinating too, is the fact that, and I got into a conversation with a buddy of mine. He lives out in San Francisco, and he started a couple of companies and done pretty well. And we were talking about this exact topic after the Windows 8 thing came out. And he said, you know, here's really the difference in terms of where we are now. And he said, this is the only reason, he's kind of a Windows guy. And he said, this is the only reason that I'm sort of taking a wait and see attitude. He said, in the PC era, everything was on the PC, and it began to migrate when it was the internet era hit, and now all of a sudden you had more and more stuff happening on the web. And he said, where we are today is not only do we have more and more stuff happening on the web, but we have all of these web services and we have several devices. And so it's no longer just a single device. We're walking around and we want to be able to access our stuff with a phone, with a tablet, with a computer, he said, that's really the difference now, that's going to make it a challenge for a combined PC tablet, is the fact that, that's really a singular device model rather than maybe a cloud-centric model. What do you guys think? Tim, what do you think?
Well, I think that what Microsoft's doing is interesting because, you know, Apple has distinct different versions of OS X for the phone, the tablet, and the PC or the laptop.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know they're all based on the same kernel at some level. What Microsoft is trying to do is they're saying, we're going to make one OS, and that OS is going to be smart enough to know, based upon the hardware that it's running on, what interface to present. So when I first heard about Windows 8, I thought, "Wow, this is a bad idea because you're gonna be in this great Metro interface, which is truly innovative and is probably a bit ahead of where anybody else, including Apple, is right now from an user interface perspective." But as soon as I boot up Microsoft Office, I'm going to get the Office interface. And that's going to be so jarring and not something that's cohesive, just like the iPad experience and the iPhone experience is so cohesive. But the way I understand it is, if I'm on a tablet, all I'm going to see is Metro. If I'm on the desktop, I can switch it so all I see is something that looks like a version of Windows 7 right now. So mm-hmm. It's a desktop interface. And I won't have this jarring going back and forth thing. There will be, you know, some tablet PCs that I think would be interesting to have, because you could have sort of the best of both worlds and switch between those. But I don't think it's going to be, you're going to be using Metro and then all of a sudden you're going to run an app and it's going to switch to the other OS. I think they're going to figure out some way to unify that user experience. So this has a really good chance of really bringing Microsoft back, I think, to be sort of leaders. And that's a position that I really don't see them in at all.
Well, and my biggest level of excitement based on, and we'll talk more about this when I do a post and so forth, but that woman that contacted Minovate about getting help for getting books for a school in Thailand, because the kids are coming over here for an event and they're going to bring over an empty suitcase and they need books suitable for, you know, fourth graders to high schoolers. And one of the things that I think about wouldn't it be great if they all had tablets? You know, so they could access all kinds of stuff on tablets. Well, I mean, you know, there's not a snowball's chance in Hades that they're going to be able to they can't buy books, let alone buy tablets. But with more and more and more organizations in the game, the costs are going to come down. They're going to continue to come down. And and that's going to just push this out to virtually everybody.
Yeah, no, Android tablets, they're starting to get to $100 or less for some of the lower end ones. So I could see a time when you're going to have a 7 or 8 inch tablet that would be $50. And I don't think that's going to be very far off.
Yeah, I hope not. That would be awesome.
Well, I agree. I agree with Tim completely. It's not going to be long, but you'll still run into power issues and things like that when you're talking about developing countries. But anyway, I really enjoyed taking a look at what Windows is offering these days. It is a complete change for them. They're going from a user interface that's worked pretty well for them for a long time to something completely different. I do find it comical that they're trying to change the language rather than, you call it what people call it.
Well, no, the Metro, that was what they called it when they first came out with the interface on the phone.
No, I mean things like Charms and PC.
Yeah, no, that was like the language from the phone, though. So they're just continuing their own deal.
Yeah. Because that's what everybody calls it, right?
Well, no, as a company, they've gotten this reputation that they've ripped everything off, which is, based upon fact, actually. And so I think that now that they're actually doing some truly innovative things, that they can call it whatever they want. So, no one else is doing this tiled sort of interface. And it makes a lot of sense if you start to, dig in and use it. So,
yeah, it does. It's very intuitive.
Yeah, iOS and Android have the same sort of grid-based, icon sort of thing. And I think that interface is sort of getting a little old. So, it's good to see some new things. And I'm kind of sad that WebOS looks like it's going away, because that was also another innovative mobile interface.
You are absolutely right. I liked WebOS. The phone was too small, both of them. But WebOS on the tablet, which I only tried once at a Best Buy, but it was nice. It was real nice.
Yeah, no, I think that they just didn't give it enough time, and I hope that someone is going to buy that from HP, because I did hear the other day that HTC was looking at that.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if someone like HTC that really understands how to make really good hardware picks up something like WebOS, I think some very interesting products could come out of that.
Yep.
Well, we'll see what happens.
One thing I was going to call out, guys, is that I saw a nice piece that Don Clark did at the Wall Street Journal from the Intel Developer Forum event, or whatever it was called, that laptop and tablet differences may fade based on some things that Intel is pushing. So that might be something interesting you'd want to read or put in the show notes. I'll send it over.
That would be great. Yeah, if you could put the link in there.
Yep.
I mean, at the end of the day, guess who's the beneficiary of all of this leadership and pushing? We all are, right?
Yep.
I mean, I just think it's great. And I look at even what Adobe is doing in terms of how Adobe is adapting, whether or not you think that's a good adaptation or not, doesn't matter. What matters is that where they're trying to position themselves in the publishing sector specifically, and with HTML5 and, even trying to keep Flash alive, is to be the tools vendor for creation. I think they're still going to be there, because, at the end of the day, when I look at tools that we use to publish to print, to publish to PDF, to create interactive eBooks, et cetera, we're using Adobe tools. We're using Photoshop and InDesign and Acrobat Professional and all of that, because those are quote unquote, real tools. Final Cut is the one for video, of course, but at the end of the day, people want to be able to publish to all these devices, regardless of which OS or who's doing what and so on. And I think we're probably still a couple years away from that, but does this make it, the Windows 8 thing, is this going to make it even more difficult for developers who are now trying to do both iOS and Android. And Tim, you've used all the tools and your head's wrapped around the mobile space. So do you see this as a natural extension, or is it yet a third leg that, that developers are going to have to, oh my God, and I got to adapt my app for this new direction?
Well, they will have to, you know, code it for Windows, but the Windows tools are the most advanced of any tools out there. So,
good point.
Well, the, the rollout of the nice rollout of Windows 8 is the coding is much more supported. You can choose what language you want to code in, which is kind of a nice departure for them. So if you want to do, you know, C++ or whatever language you're most comfortable with, Windows 8 will support it. It's not getting down to the smaller languages like, you know, Ruby and things like that, but it does make it a lot easier to build an application for Windows 8.
Yeah, I think for development, Windows 8 will be fairly easy for developers to deal with. So, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of apps, a lot more apps than you would expect from, you know, a non-iOS or Android platform. So it will be definitely a market force.
Well, I will tell you that there's nobody on the planet in the technology space that does a better job of partnering and a better job of engaging developers than Microsoft. I mean, they just, you know, a lot of people are saying, God, they've been out of the game. They're not even a factor anymore. People don't talk about them. Well, guess what? Now, after the Windows 8 announcement, everybody's talking about them.
Yeah, no, they're a huge company. They've got a lot of resources, make a lot of money. And, you know, they've got a huge customer base in the enterprise. So if they can make something happen on the consumer side, they're just going to get bigger and bigger.
Yeah, exactly. Well, great. Hey, what's coming up? What events have we got coming up?
And next week is looks like it's going to be a fairly busy week. Mobile Twin Cities is Tuesday night. WordPress right. MSP is on Thursday night.
Yep.
There's a She's Geeky Unconference. None of us can go, but on the 24th.
Saturday. That's a Saturday.
Saturday, yeah.
Could we wear wigs and show up?
You could.
You first.
Feel free, Graham, really.
You look good in that. Mini demo is tentatively scheduled, 7th or 8th. We're not sure, but
October. Of October.
Yeah. They always like to spring these things on us at the last minute, kind of, you know, maybe 2 weeks notice or something.
Hey, they don't want you to be complacent.
Yeah, really. You know? Yeah. It's like, you try to schedule, you know, get people scheduled to come in advance. It's like impossible, though.
Yeah. But and then we'll be doing the MEMA Summit. October 11th is the workshops and the 12th is the all day event. And this year keynotes are going to be Chris Anderson, the editor in chief of Wired. By the way, I'll put a link in the show notes, but if you have a chance to go listen to Triangulation with Leo Laporte and his cohort, I can't remember.
Tom Merritt.
Thank you. They interviewed Chris and it was really one of the first times that I've really sort of understood his capability and so on and the kinds of things that he's done. So it's a really fascinating interview. But the other fellow who's the morning keynote, Avinash Kaushik, the co-founder.
That's easy for you to say.
I know. Well,
Gesundheit, sir.
I don't even. Yeah, like he's going to appreciate that. You racist.
Oh, stop.
But I don't know this man.
I don't either.
He's an analytics evangelist for Google, and I've never heard his name come up before.
I bet he's a lot smarter than you are.
He might be smarter than all of us.
He might be more knowledgeable, Tim. I don't know about smarter.
You don't read his blog, Occam's Razor? I've been reading this for years. Yeah.
Really?
No, seriously, yeah.
You haven't, you know, really, Occam's Razor is, yeah, you're not
plugged into this? Out of the 273 blogs that I follow now, he's not in there, but I'll go take a look.
Yeah. So we're going to have an analytics geek on stage. This will be a riveting keynote.
Oh, now stop.
I'm sure it'll be good.
I bet you it will be actually. Yeah.
Drink lots of coffee.
Yeah. Well,
stay awake.
Maybe he'll announce something about the next phase of Google Analytics, which, by the way, I am surprised because I'm helping clients use Google Analytics for campaign management and building landing pages and then being able to test different landing pages and then seeing what conversions are like. And Google Analytics is free and you can do all this stuff for free. It's just it's amazing to me that more people don't take advantage of it. So maybe he'll talk about that stuff. I don't know.
Well, they do everything to get you to spend more money on AdWords.
Well, there's no doubt about that.
That's where they make the money, right?
Of course. That's the whole point. Yeah, yeah. So, well, good.
Good stuff coming up.
Yeah.
All there is to it. So, well, it's good to chat with you guys, and we'll look forward to yet another Minute of Eight Gang podcast next week, right?
Absolutely. Thanks everybody for listening.
Hey, have a great weekend.
Travel safe, Graham.
Oh yeah, I'll be out here for a few days. Be home on late Sunday night. So see you guys next week.
Take care.
Great, everybody. Have a great week. We'll see you next week on the Minute of Eight Gang podcast.
Adios.
Yep.
Surprising what you get from natural highs. Bet on your favorite and you realize.